Well, hello, everyone. Welcome to another Tech Doctor podcast. This is Robert, the Tech Doctor. And as always, along with me is Allison Hartley. How are you doing today, Allison?
I'm doing fabulous. It's great to be back.
Yes, we have taken a bit of a podcasting hiatus, you might say, even though we've been publishing a few of them along this summer. I was on vacation for a while, and you've been busy with things, but we're trying to get back in the old podcasting saddle, huh?
Yep, and Skype has clearly forgotten us, given the issues we've been having today.
Yes, we've had a time with Skype today, and we hope this will that it will settle down and the Skype gods will be kind to us. Really excited this time about having someone back with us on the Tech Doctor podcast who's been here before. It's actually been about a year ago. But she's a well-known writer and editor and columnist and disability advocate, and it's such a pleasure to have you back. Deborah Kendrick, welcome back, and thank you for spending a little time with us today.
Thank you. It is my pleasure to be here again.
Great. Well, the reason that I so wanted you to come and talk with us on the podcast today is because of an article that I read that appeared, I know, both in the Columbus Dispatch and also in the syndicated Columbus Weekly from the National Braille Press, which is a fabulous publication that everyone should subscribe to. If you don't, we can talk more about that some other time. But the article had the headline, Old School Braille Needs Image Update. And it's a fascinating article where you went and drew some parallels with the way images have changed over the years about Helen Keller and about American Sign Language, and you drew some parallels to some of the things that you think maybe needs to happen with Braille in 2013. So I thought it was a fabulous article, and I wish you would just take a moment and tell us a bit about it, whatever you want to say about it, so we can just kind of find a starting point here.
I would love to, because I love Braille, and I love how this particular column kind of came into being. So just a little bit of the backstory. A week or so before I wrote this column, well, June 19th through 21st, the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped held a conference at Perkins, and Perkins were collaborators in putting on this conference that they called the first ever Braille Summit. And the purpose of this conference was for NLS to kind of gather information about where we are with Braille, how people feel about Braille, what direction NLS needs to take regarding Braille in terms of Braille production and distribution, and just the whole world of Braille. And so they brought together Braille readers and educators and producers and librarians and technology people, and they kept the attendance limited to about 100 people. So I was privileged to be on a presenting panel for that conference as a Braille reader. And so in my presentation, I had a lot of things to say, as we all do who are Braille readers. There are so many, you know, reminiscences and experiences regarding Braille. But one of the things that I said was that I think Braille needs a marketing campaign. The reason that fewer people are reading Braille, in large part, is because it kind of has a bad reputation. It just needs a facelift. A wonderful thing that came out of that conference was we had several focus groups, and I won't go through all the process of how it was a lot of hard work and wonderful work that resulted in several recommendations that NLS took back with them. And since this was in my brain and several others, you know, the idea of Braille is cool, needs to be cool, kept percolating. So that wound up being on our list of highest recommendations, that there needs to be an image facelift, if you will. So a week later, I needed to file my regular Sunday column for the Columbus Dispatch, and it happened to be Helen Keller's birthday, and I was thinking about all of these things, and I got to thinking, yeah, there was a time when Helen Keller wasn't cool. Now we think she's very cool, but there was a time when I think many of us who were blind, at any rate, thought she was just kind of strange, and she was thought of as kind of a paragon and not like regular people. And then I got to thinking how we can learn so much from the deaf community, because there was a time when we thought American Sign Language was just people frantically waving their hands around, and of course now everybody knows a little bit of sign. Mothers teach it to their babies, and lots of college campuses and offer it as for credit, and everybody knows a little bit of sign language. It's just commonplace. Everybody knows how to sign a few things in ASL. So Braille needs to follow in that trend. I've got just a couple paragraphs here that I thought I'd read, if that's okay, from the column that just sort of show where my head was going with this.
Yeah, please
Braille
do.
Is cool.
Sure.
Okay. So now remember, this is a column that appears in a daily newspaper for the general public, for people who don't necessarily know Braille. So I say, for those of us who are fortunate enough to use it, of course Braille is cool. Reading and writing and language are recognized universally as keys to information, knowledge, success. Braille is just another literacy medium, a system of dots rather than lines and squiggles. You see it on elevator panels and restroom doors. Why not look it up in the encyclopedia and puzzle out the numbers and letters? Teach it to your children and grandchildren. It can be a fun tool for writing secret messages. That's how it began, after all. 19th century French military developed night writing as a way for soldiers to relay messages after dark. One of them shared it with a school for the blind. Young Louis Braille got his hands on it and turned it into a system that could convey to the fingertips any text ever written. Every word I've ever written was read by me in Braille. It's not quirky or complicated or obsolete. It's just literacy, and that is 100% cool.
Excellent. And when you talk about it being just literacy, you also say in that article that you believe that a person who doesn't use Braille, who is blind, really isn't literate in the sense of having a written language, having the structure, the sentences laid out, the paragraphs, the spelling, and all that. That's a pretty strong statement to make. Am I representing that fairly, that's your belief?
Absolutely. I cannot imagine being the writer that I am without having read Braille, because you see it's not just hearing language, it's seeing language, and the only way we can see language is with our fingers. And some would argue this. A particular blind scientist that I know says this isn't exactly right, but other scientists say that it is, that when we as blind people read Braille, it stimulates the visual cortex. So I, for one, firmly believe and feel that I'm seeing language when I'm reading in Braille. I love audiobooks. I listen to hundreds of audiobooks, but it's not the same experience as reading.
I'm curious whether you do this, you Allison, and you Deborah, but I'm a really extensive Braille user myself, and I tend to find myself a lot of times actually visualizing written language in Braille. When I think of something that someone is saying to me, I very well might think of it written down in the Braille dot patterns.
Yeah, yeah, that's so cool. I think I actually mentioned that in my presentation at the Braille Summit, because I think it's kind of quirky, Robert. I'm not sure there are a whole lot of us who do. Do you do it, Allison? Do you see words in Braille?
I do, and I take it a step further when I'm using my iPhone, uh-huh. and I'm touching a particular icon on the screen. I swear I can feel it in Braille, even though it's not really there. It's like ghost Braille.
I get that. I totally get that. That's how I remember things. You know, like all of us, I think, from necessity, before technology, you know, we're all kind of known for having these phenomenal memories and everything, although, you know, the more dependent we get on technology, the less good our memories are. But I think, as a rule, blind people do have really good memories. And when I remember something, I always say to people, if I don't have anything in my hands to write it down, I can remember one thing for a little while, you know, like one email, one phone number, one address. And I always picture that in Braille.
Yep.
But, you know, what your point that is something that I haven't heard people really make a whole lot is that instead of squiggles, printed symbols, we have dots.
Exactly.
But really, it seems to me that you're making a pretty good case for, as far as the brain's concerned, it's likely to be a very similar process, whether you're interpreting squiggles or dots. There's a lot of parallel there.
I think so. I think when I was in college, I had a work-study job for a while where I worked in, ironically, the remedial reading lab. I mean, this was for sighted students. So I learned how to operate these pieces of equipment that they use to help students with learning to speed read and stay on track and, you know, various kinds of things like that. And in learning some of the principles, I remember thinking, yeah, Braille works just like that. And one that stuck with me was this business of, now, you know, this was a long time ago, so maybe reading specialists wouldn't back this up today, but one of the principles was that when a sighted person is reading down a column, that the eye movement is so rapid that no one is aware of it, but that basically the left eye is beginning to pick up the next line while the right eye is finishing the line above. And I just remember thinking, that is so cool, because that's exactly how I read with my hands. And people will tell me when I'm reading that what it looks like is that my hands are going apart, together, apart, together, apart, together, which, of course, they're not. But because you're reading rapidly, one hand is finishing the line above while the left hand is dropping down and reading part of the next line. Anyway, I don't know that that's really so germane to a discussion of Braille as literacy, but it's an interesting fact that shows that how we read is also, if taught properly, is also very similar to how sighted people read, like the process.
Yeah, I think you're right. And the process of sort of beginning the next line just as you finish the previous line is the way that most of us, I think, maintain that speed of Braille reading that makes it feasible, for example, for us to read things aloud the way you just did those couple paragraphs from your article.
Right.
And I think maybe, for me at least, there was a period in my life where I sort of felt like I needed to speed up everything, especially when the talking computers got so popular and the audiobooks came along. And I sort of felt like, wow, you know, it's just too slow to try to read it in Braille. But in recent years, I've completely reversed my thinking on that and have discovered that there's a great joy in slowing down and actually reading something and fully absorbing it, really getting the meat of it, and without trying to race through everything. And for me, at least, Braille is just a different experience from listening to audio.
And, you know, something that I will do sometimes is, you know, as I said, I read hundreds of books that are audio books from NLS and everywhere else.
Yeah, me too.
But sometimes if I'm reading, and technically we're not reading, we're listening. So if I'm listening to a book, but even that, you know, it feels like reading because of all this Braille stuff. You know, a lot of times you're picturing the words as you're hearing them. But sometimes if the language is really beautiful, what I'll do is say I'm listening to a book from Bard or Audible.com, and the prose is just so beautiful that I really want to focus on it, I'll go grab the same book from Bookshare, and I'll look at it in Braille so that I can really, really focus on the language and see the way the author put it together. Because, you know what, I mean, writing is such an art form and one of the most accessible art forms to us, but you need to see the shapes of paragraphs and sentences and to fully appreciate that. So, and that's, you know, obviously that's not something I do with every book I read, but when I'm really, really drawn to a writing style, that's something that I'll do. And it's, and then of course, you know, with Bookshare, you can, on a, you know, a Braille-aware device, you can pretty much listen and read simultaneously.
Yeah, I will actually very often read parts of the book in Braille and listen to parts of it if I'm in a situation where I'm tired or where it's better somehow listening, or there's a part of it I just want to get through pretty quickly. So I use the two interchangeably very frequently.
Me too. If I find there's something that I really want to comprehend, I still find that Braille is the easiest and most efficient means for me to do that.
So you're sort of agreeing that there is a different process that happens when you use Braille versus listening to
absolutely.
Something.
Absolutely.
And Allison's word comprehend triggers a whole other area of all of this importance of Braille stuff for me, and I think probably for a lot of people. When I was in college, I did not have any Braille textbooks. You know, I was in college before we had technology and electronic texts and everything. So I didn't have any Braille textbooks. All my books were recorded. And the way that I took notes in those days, I used grade 3 Braille and traditional spiral notebook, so the very thin paper, so I could punch with a slate and stylus very, very rapidly and pretty much got verbatim notes. And what I would do is sit at my desk and listen to a recorded book and take voluminous notes. And I didn't realize for years what was going on, what that process was all about. And the same thing, if I would have someone read to me something that wasn't recorded, I'd have a live reader, I would sit there and be taking voluminous notes in my little spiral notebooks and just have pages and pages and pages of notes that were pretty much verbatim what I had heard. And what I realized down the road was that basically, I'm a visual learner, which means for me to comprehend new and complicated information, I need to see it. I can't just hear it. I would fall asleep sometimes when, you know, not if someone's reading me a story that's entertaining, but, you know, taking courses that were boring to me or complicated, or now, you know, when I'm trying to learn anything that's new, if I just listen, I zone out. I go to another place, you know. I just can't focus. But if I get the words under my hands, so that's what I was doing. I was basically transcribing what I heard, putting it into Braille so I could look at it and understand it. And I think that that's something that's overlooked with so many kids and adults not being taught Braille, that channel of learning is being overlooked. For those people who are visual learners, they've got no inroad. If they're not getting Braille, they're not getting an opportunity to get the information into that part of the brain.
What do you all think happened to Braille? Why did it stop? Why did it lose so much of its popularity? Why did people stop teaching it in school? I mean, it was a real emphasis in, you know, in 1961 when I was in first grade in North Carolina. It was taught to me at exactly the same time my sighted peers in my first grade class were learning to read and write print. But it seems like sometime after that, with the talking devices and all, somehow it lost its cool, or it lost something.
Well, the statistics say that in the 60s, 50% of blind kids who were in school were being taught Braille. So we were very fortunate, is what that means. And that today, 10% of children in schools are being taught Braille. Mm. I think, the obvious is tape recordings came along, and then talking computers, and then the thinking was, oh, this is so much easier. Kids can learn this so much faster. They don't need Braille. But I think that what's not focused on enough is that part of the reason for that is that there are so many sighted teachers of blind kids. A blind teacher who uses Braille is not going to hesitate to teach Braille. But a sighted teacher who learned Braille as one course, as I learned French in one course in college, is not going to teach it if it's not mandatory.
But somehow, haven't they missed a very important point that you've been making, that without learning Braille, you don't get to participate in a whole type of processing that we've just been talking about?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's odd to me that educators don't get that, or don't see that.
I know. And what was really, really encouraging and gratifying at the Braille Summit was to hear educators talk so positively about Braille. But then again, you know, I mean, I'm thinking of Diane Wormsley, who teaches at, is it North Carolina University, I think. To hear someone like that, even though she's sighted, talk about Braille just as we are right here. I mean, I just remember a couple of examples that she said that were so great. She said, have you ever heard a teacher say, well, we're having to get down to desperate measures. It's, you know, last resort. Nothing else is working. We've tried everything, and unfortunately, we're going to have to teach this child print. And it was so great. Like, yeah. But, you know, there are clearly educators who are sighted and who are as passionate about Braille as we are, but they're a minority, and that's why we need to have a Braille is Cool campaign. We need to get more people aware of Braille as not something old and clunky and obsolete and difficult to learn, but as something that's cool and trendy and gives you a way to read under the covers with the lights off.
Well, one of the things that you did in your article was you pointed out that over the years, Helen Keller has become cool because we've really gotten to know more about her as a human being. We've gotten to know that she's not this paragon, as you say, but she was a real woman. And is there some way to use that humanizing message to help people understand why Braille is cool?
I think that maybe a closer parallel is sign language. You know, we could learn a lot from the deaf community, because if you think about it, they're a step ahead of us frequently. You know, they had closed captioning on all major television networks 10 to 20 years ahead of us with video description.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, more recently, Netflix was not passing through the closed captions or the audio description, and the deaf people held their feet to the fire and won, and now they have to pass that captioning through, and, you know, hopefully the blind community will follow suit, and the same will happen with description. But, so, I mean, there are a lot of examples like that, but sign language, you know, as I said in the column, I can remember a time when, you know, sighted people would see deaf people in a store and they would comment, you know, they kind of knew that they were talking, but it was kind of weird. It was kind of freaky.
People waving their hands around.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think my own first awareness of it was watching Sesame Street with my kids, you know, and there was so much sign language on Sesame Street. But, you know, now lots and lots of people take it for college credit. And, you know, as I said in the column, lots of mothers are teaching it to their babies, because now we know that babies can actually learn and mimic signed words before they can vocalize words, which kind of, you know, kind of isn't so fun for those of us who are blind, but
but people being excited about ASL though, and excited about learning it and taking courses in it, and
people think it's cool. Like if you're at a play or a concert, you know, how often has this happened to you where somebody says, oh wow, that's really cool, they've got a sign language interpreter up there. It's not like, oh, what's that freak doing, you know? So I think if we could get Braille into more popular culture, have it in more children's books, on, you know, there have been sporadic toys with Braille, and then they're kind of on the market, and then they disappear. So, you know, if we could have a little more influence with that, maybe knowing about them, encouraging people to buy them, getting more. I mean, there have been a few efforts. You know, there's some people who make Braille jewelry, but some of that stuff is only cool to blind people. And the more of it that can be blended into popular culture for everybody, I mean, there's just, if we could encourage our libraries to have, you know, if every public library, little branch neighborhood library, had a couple of print Braille books for kids on hand, so that when the sighted kids are looking through the books, they see those and they're, oh, what's this? Well, this, because, you know, there again, children are such an interesting barometer of how odd or normal something is, and when I read a storybook to children, the adults are noticing, oh, she's reading from Braille, isn't that interesting? The children aren't even noticing that. They're noticing a grown-up is reading a story to me, and maybe they'll notice the Braille and touch it, and oh, that's cool. You know, there's a more natural flow of, you know, acceptance that it's just another way to read. So I think,
yeah, the kids don't see it as weird, or the kids don't see it as unusual. You know, it's like, cool, she just, that's the way she reads, you know, or that's the way he reads.
Yeah.
And that's how it always happens when I talk to kindergarten classes and elementary school classes. I always show them Braille and they always get excited about it. But it seems to me that it's easy enough to get the kids excited. And I definitely agree with you that there needs to be more out there, more in libraries, more available and all that. But it seems to me that Braille has a bigger problem even beyond that is that even people who, you know, just have casual knowledge of it seem to think that it has largely been replaced by the talking devices and the audio books and all. I was sitting on the porch with my father a month ago on vacation. I was reading something on an electronic braille device, and he was like, "Wow, I didn't know you used braille anymore. I thought, you know, I thought it had been replaced, you know." And I was like, "No, you may not have, you know, realized I was reading or seen me do it, because I'm not using paper anymore, but I use this electronic device." And I mean, he's 82 years old and has obviously known about braille ever since, you know, I was a kid. But even his perception was that it wasn't cool anymore. It wasn't used anymore. And he's not, you know, up on what's going on with the technology or anything, other than the fact that he's my dad. But it's just interesting if even someone like him has somehow acquired that perception, then Braille's got a real problem on its hands.
The National Braille has been giving for 5 years an award called the Touch of Genius Award, and they give this to someone, a person or organization who's come up with something new to promote the use of Braille or tactile graphics. And this year, the winner was a young woman who teaches Braille at Blind Inc. It's the NFB Training Center, Blindness Training Center in Minneapolis. And she's come up with a new method of teaching Braille, which is it's one of those things that it's so simple, it's brilliant. She's sort of broken it up into, now you learn to memorize these symbols, and now you learn to recognize these symbols by touch. And it's more of an adult approach, because she says, you know, this is for adults. They already know how to read. And she's just teaching them a new system of reading. Okay, so one thing that she's doing that I think is very smart, she's using electronic Braille devices, I think mostly Braille notes, maybe older Braille notes, but devices that will speak, so that when a new user of Braille enters TGR, for the short form of together, the device will speak together, so they get instant feedback that they're doing it correctly. And I think that's a really good use of an electronic Braille device. And it also makes me think how those of us who, I know when I'm anywhere in the public and I'm taking notes or I'm reading on my refreshable Braille display, I don't take enough advantage to explain it to people. You know, like sometimes people will say, "Oh, what is that? That's interesting." And I just say, "Oh, you know, it's just, think of it as, you know, depending on whatever the technology of the year is." You know, I used to say, "Well, think of it as kind of a Braille BlackBerry." And you know, or something that they could relate to, you know. So now, you know, you might say, "Oh, it's like an iPad or an iPhone," but it's really not. But instead, I think what we should be doing is taking a little bit of time whenever those questions are asked and read a little bit to the person and show them, you know, that this is how I read, and I've got 200 books in here and today's newspaper and whatever else.
Yeah, I agree with you and I'm going to start doing more of that, because I kind of fallen into the same thing that you have, sort of giving it a passing nod. Well, it's Braille, you know, or whatever, and it can do the same thing you can do with your visual display. But I think you're right. We need to slow down and start educating people, because clearly you mentioned that, you know, 85% of the people who are employed, which sadly isn't very many blind people employed, use Braille on the job. So clearly, it's a very important component of doing a job of being able to work. And so, and as you already mentioned, of education, of course. So we've got to somehow get back to the basics, it seems like. Yeah.
I think that is the most compelling statistic we have, and that it should be emblazoned over the desk of every vocational rehabilitation counselor, every agency person who teaches blind people who are newly blind, every TVI, you know, who comes out of college and is getting a job working with kids. Everybody should be thinking about that statistic. I was making a presentation to some voc rehab counselors here recently about Braille and just trying to generate some interest among them and saying, you know, will these people come to you who have lost their sight and they need to be retrained and they want to work and you're telling them what they need, but how often are you telling them they need Braille? Hardly ever. And so since this was a local presentation, I counted up the blind staff members in our local agency, and there are 7 professional staff members who are blind, and every single one of them uses Braille. And I bet if, you know, anyone who listens to this thinks about an agency that you know, or it doesn't have to be an agency for blind people, it can be any profession, but think of the professionals you know, and you're going to have the same kind of numbers. 85% of us. I mean, if people really care about blind people getting jobs, that seems to be a pretty logical starting point to me.
It's interesting that you mentioned voc rehab counselors, because that's actually what I do for the state of California. And I know that Braille is absolutely essential to me and in my job. I work in a very busy office environment with cubicles, and they're just, we're at full capacity, and there are fax machines going off and phones ringing and people talking, and I don't know what I would do most days without my Braille display, because the people kind of overpower JAWS a lot of the time, the synthesized voice. And again, if I really want to comprehend, if I'm reading a report from a vendor or even reading through a case note that I've written, I go immediately to my Braille display. And as a counselor, I am constantly pushing Braille with my clients, even if they don't think they're going to need it right away. I say, if you're in a dark elevator and you want to know what floor you have to go to, you are going to want to be able to read those numbers at the very least in Braille.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, that's such a good example, because everybody knows there's Braille on the elevator panels now.
Yep.
And I know we've all been there, been in an elevator where there are people who don't know Braille and can't see well enough to see the print, and they just take it for granted that they're helpless. Somebody else has to push the button because it doesn't occur to them that they could learn to read those Braille numbers. That's great that you use that as an example. I love that.
Do very many of your clients take you up on it, Allison? Do they take Braille very seriously?
You know, I have to say most of them do. Obviously, the extent to which they become fluent depends on a lot of factors, but I would say that most people at least give it a try.
So if they did want to become fluent in Braille in California, would there be someone to teach them?
Yes. Fortunately, we do have a lot of really excellent vendors in place to assist with that.
Because I worry sometimes that there aren't, and I don't think there are, enough good Braille teachers out there.
In the area that I serve, we're very fortunate. Very.
I think California pretty much leads the way in that, too. I mean, that's just the impression I get, you know, in talking to people, being at conferences and on lists and so forth, that there just seems to be a stronger Braille presence in California than, for example, here in Ohio. It's getting better, certainly, but and I think too that you are important as a role model. And that's, I think that it would be really good if we all could encourage more young people who are in college and trying to figure out what to do to become teachers of blind kids and voc rehab counselors and teachers of blind adults, because historically those were the only jobs, you know, that blind people could get. You know, you couldn't do anything else. You could teach other blind people. And then sighted people kind of came in and saw, oh, hey, these are pretty good jobs. You get pretty good money. This is an okay way to go. And now the scales are kind of tipped. You know, there are way more sighted people doing those jobs than there are blind people. And while, you know, it's great that we all pursue our dreams and do whatever it is that we're talented and inclined to do, there's a real need, I think, for more blind role models like you. You know, people who are, because if you come to your counselor and your counselor is reading from Braille notes about you, that's going to make an impression.
Yep, which I do very regularly.
You just gave me a really good idea, and I've never done it before, and I have no idea why, and because I never thought of it. But here at the university where I work, I'm going to go talk to the special education department and see if I can somehow get an hour at some point with the students who are being trained in special ed and show them Braille, talk to them about Braille, to have the kind of conversation we're having here, because that's where we have to start.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because I don't think people get it in general. I don't think people have really stopped and thought long enough about the different types of information processing and how much a blind person is missing when they don't engage with Braille.
And speaking to a class, that's another really good example of why everybody who can't use conventional print needs at least some Braille literacy, because how often has each of us seen somebody with low vision trying to make a presentation, and this might be a truly intellectually gifted human being, but because he or she can't read print very well, they're up there struggling with their 22-point font, trying to read their notes, and it's painful. It's painful to witness that they, you know, whereas with Braille, even if you only learn enough to give yourself cue cards with major points on Braille index cards, you're not going to be doing that fumbling and that struggling. I personally, whenever I give speeches, I write them out completely and I just read them. And it, you know, people say, oh, you have a real advantage because A, you don't sound like you're reading, and B, you can look at the audience. You never have to look down at your notes.
Exactly. Yeah, I always use Braille when I do a presentation.
Oh, absolutely. Me too.
Of any kind. But, you know, there are people who are blind, and some of them do it better than others. It's not just low vision, but people who are blind who will actually try to give presentations while listening to their speech synthesizer, giving them information into their ear. And that can be pretty disjointed. And
I could never do it.
I know.
I have mad respect for the people who can, but I could never do it.
But, yeah, right. But, you know, that's got to be making a good case for Braille. Even if you can do that, I'm confident that if you know Braille, you can certainly be more natural, more relaxed during your presentation, because you're not having to try to process some speech while you're also talking at the same time.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is complicated to do. But I think we have made, you know, just in this hour, a really good case for the importance of Braille and for advocating for it. But I'm curious, you know, and we've come up with some ideas, just like I'm sure a lot of good ideas were created and generated at the Braille Summit that you attended. But it seems like now we have to figure out how to mobilize, how to take those ideas and actually hit the street.
Yeah, exactly. Well, my hope is that one or more than one of the major organizations that either NLS or one of the Braille production houses or one of the consumer organizations or all of the above will really think seriously about the whole Braille is cool campaign idea and get some things generated in the public, because, you know, we as individuals who care can do some, and everybody needs to do whatever each of us can. But if there's, and I think, you know, some efforts are being made by very, you know, National Braille Press has done some really good things to promote Braille among children in particular, and the NFB has done the Bell programs for children, which encourages Braille among children who are usually children who are low vision and not getting Braille at school. So the Bell programs are like little day camps that bring children in for a lot of fun activities that incorporate Braille in some really ingenious ways, by the way, into games and decorating cookies with M&Ms to make Braille initials and playing Braille Twister and, you know, all kinds of fun things like that. And so I think those kinds of efforts are good, and we just I just hope that from the Braille Summit somebody picks that up and really runs with it in a big way.
I hope so too. And one of the points that you made triggered something for me. You know, I think a lot of us, myself included, have gotten really caught up in being frustrated by or saddened by the expense of these electronic Braille devices. And I sincerely hope that the cost of them will come down, that some new technologies will come along. But that shouldn't stop people from engaging with Braille. You know, if you can't afford an electronic Braille display, why not get a slate and stylus like what you used when you were in college? And that system still works just as well as it ever did.
Exactly. And again, it's the kind of thing that if you I have heard teachers say, oh, you know, I don't teach that to children when they're too young because it's so complicated. But so much of whether something is difficult or not so difficult is in the approach to teaching it. So whether you're talking children or adults, if you just present the slate and stylus as this is the equivalent of a pencil, then, you know, you don't hear anybody saying we don't need pens anymore. I mean, everybody has an iPhone or a BlackBerry or, you know, something of that sort, but you don't hear any sighted people saying they don't need pens anymore. So, you know, the same should apply to the slate and stylus. And, I learned the slate and stylus in the second grade because that's just what you did. And, you know.
Yeah, so did I. And I think people get caught up in the fact that, you know, they with the slate and stylus, you have to write upside down and backwards. You write from right to left, and the dots 1, 2, and 3 are on the right side as opposed to on the left side. But, you know, you don't have to think, you don't have to get all caught up in that. This is just how you use a slate and stylus. And we know how to use all kinds of different devices, QWERTY keyboards and Braille keyboards and phones and blah, blah, blah. And we adapt to each one's unique characteristics so that we can make use of it. And a slate and stylus is no different. And I'd love to see people, you know, get less caught up in the complexity of it and just learn to use it. It's not that difficult if you learn it.
Exactly. Well, and you know, you think if little 6- and 7-year-olds can learn Braille and learn to read fluently and learn to write with devices like slate and styluses or Braille notes or Braille senses or whatever, but if little kids can learn those things, then it can't be rocket science, right?
Well, we're living proof that little kids can do that.
Exactly.
I mean, I wasn't given a, you know, I didn't know any different
It's exactly.
Just, it's just yeah. what I did. It's just what I was taught. And that we need to really get back to that. I think it needs, like you said, you know, we haven't stopped teaching sighted students the ability to read print. We've got to get Braille back to that same level for students who are blind, because it got lost somewhere along the way.
You know, one story that always comes to mind for me is my mom, who was a young woman who knew nothing about Braille when I was born, but she knew that it was going to be my path to literacy. It was going to be the only way to literacy for me. So what she did is she made Braille flashcards for me using a Braille labeler when I was about 2 years old, really before I even had a lot of blindness-related services, because she knew that I had to get used to feeling Braille. So before I even really knew that, hey, this is letters, I remember sitting on her lap and just checking out these cards, and she would just drum into my head, you know, this is a letter A, this is a letter D. And, you know, I didn't get it so much in terms of the literacy aspect, but I got it in terms of being able to recognize and feel the Braille. And then when I started learning it on the first day of kindergarten, I had that foundation at least. And it actually helped me, I think, to learn Braille a lot more quickly.
So we need to be talking to parents, not just educators.
Exactly. When my kids were little, we used a lot of... I put Braille on a lot of things so that, you know, I could tell them what, you know, like on puzzles and stuff, I would put the name of the puzzle in Braille so I knew which one we had. And I'd put, if they were color things, I'd put Braille labels with the colors on the toy so I could say, this is the red ball, you know. Well, anyway, so, but the reverse should be more commonplace for sighted parents with sighted kids, even that, we used to use all these magnetic, and they're still around, magnetic letters and numbers, you know, that they come in little puzzles, and you put the A in the A slot and the B in the B slot. Mm-hmm. Well, National Braille Press has sets of them that are larger than usual, and they all have the Braille letters. So it's the print capital G, but on the print capital G is a Braille G. And I actually did have a set like that for one of my kids, but they're not commonplace. And if you know, maybe everybody who wants to, you know, buy a present for some sighted little kid that you know, buy them a set of alphabet letters that have Braille on them, so that mm-hmm. that little sighted kid will be seeing, you know, the Braille J with the print J. What happened with sign language is that, you know, you would buy little storybooks and there would be the signs for some of the words throughout the book. And that as kids are learning to read, they're learning, oh, that's the sign for sleep. That's the sign for dog. And then they're, you know, just learning that as part of. And another analogy is Spanish. You know, more and more and more we're having Spanish sort of blended in with books and songs for children, because it's becoming a language that's increasingly important. And no, Braille is not a language. I know.
Yeah, but your point's a good one, though. And of course, the National Braille Press has lots of books that are print and Braille, especially children's books. And I use them with my son. He's 20 now, but, you know, a lot. But again, it's mostly the blind parents who use them with their kids. But why not, you know, all of us give one of those books to a sighted kid that we know?
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Really start spreading this out more and getting more people at least aware of it. And I think aware of it just being a very natural thing, a road to literacy that we can't forget about any longer. Well, I think we've done a pretty good job of kind of covering at least the things that I wanted to be sure to touch on. Is there anything else either of you can think of that you'd like to be sure and mention before we sign off of this podcast for this time?
Yeah, one thing, I would be remiss, since this is, after all, the Tech Doctors podcast, if I were not to mention what the leading recommendation was that came out of the Braille Summit. There were two things that came up over and over and over again, and there were a few others, but the two that came out on top of all the recommendations were, as we've been talking about, Braille is Cool campaign. But the number one was that what we all encouraged NLS to do is to find a way of producing a low-cost, affordable, ergo distributable to all patrons, refreshable Braille display, because we were all in concurrence that Braille is here to stay, it's not going anywhere, but lots of us who can find ourselves downloading lots and lots and lots of Braille books to electronic Braille-aware devices rather than schlepping around large and bulky Braille books. And so that was the leading recommendation, that NLS find a way to develop a low-cost Braille display that could be distributed to everybody. Everything NLS does, they do so well, but they also are such sticklers for accuracy, and you know, we probably won't be seeing this refreshable Braille display next year.
No, but it's certainly a worthwhile goal to work toward.
Yeah, I think it's something that we will eventually see.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. That would be a fabulous thing. And I think the other thing that I wanted to mention was that there is a very interesting piece of software, an app now for the iOS devices called mBraille. And it allows people to use the touchscreen as if it were a Braille writing device. And we've covered mBraille on this podcast before, even had the developer on. But mBraille is yet another way that a blind person can make really great use of entering text on a touch screen that otherwise is at best cumbersome to use. But on the iPad, actually, you can type on mBraille just as if you were typing on a Perkins-style Braille writer. On the iPhone, you have to turn your hands a different way, but still the same principle applies. But it's another way for people to make use of Braille on a touchscreen. So it's pretty exciting, actually. Well, today we've really covered a number of areas where Braille might be very useful, and I think we've really done a pretty good job of making a case for Braille being very important for parents, for educators, and perhaps most importantly, for people who are blind who really need and want to be a part of this literate society that we all live in. And Deborah, thank you so much for spending time with us and for sharing your thoughts. You've really clearly given this a lot of thought, and it's great to hear what you have had to say about it.
Well, thank you for inviting me to be here. I love the Tech Doctors podcast, and I am honored to be a part of another one.
Well, it's great to have you. And Allison, do you have any final comments on this whole Braille issue?
Well, I'm just so glad that it's something we were able to talk about, because it's always been something that's very near and dear to my heart. And I think we had a wonderful, thought-provoking, thorough discussion. And I'm just really glad, again, that you were here, Deborah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I guess that's going to do it for this time on the Tech Doctor podcast. So this is Robert the Tech Doctor. Until next time, saying so long.
And this is Allison Hartley saying bye, everyone.